Oi, you. It's time for another episode of Dorothy and the Dealer. Let's tune into the conversation.
Hi, everyone.
Hello, people.
Well, we are really excited about our guest today. I first personally heard about our guest today many years ago when I first read a book called The Way of the Peaceful Warrior. And then we were lucky enough to have this person join us on our 2016 Masterminds of the Caribbean Mindset and Leadership Summit. And really, really glad to have you here. Dan Millman, welcome.
Well, thank you. I'm very happy to be with you, Mitch Mills and listeners.
And so, Dan, I have to say, the first time I got introduced to your work was you have masters that come in and out of your life. My first two masters, it was one of the French Canadian guy and his wife. He was a chiropractor. She had a master's in child psychology, and both two brilliant minds. And you know, it's like you meet your teachers when you're ready to meet your teachers. And I'd gone through a lot of drama and trauma in my life, and these two people swept me under their wing and could see I had a huge interest in human development. Well, I had a huge interest to understand life and the world and the universe. And one of the first books that they handed me was The Way of the Peaceful Warrior. And they explained it to me like this. They said to me, you know, when this book came out, Mitch, in the West, it was like it took ancient mysticism, you know, from, you know, Native American Indians right through to, you know, the East. And it was one of the first books to put it into a language and into a story that people in the West could relate to. And it was, she said to me, you know, when this book came out, if you hadn't read this book, you know, it was so big that you were kind of not considered to be spiritual or to understand life, you know. And this was one of the great books that introduced people to, as I said, you know, ancient mysticism. And so I remember reading the book and thinking, wow, this is like almost supernatural. But it was put together in such a way that it made it relatable, understandable, and I could really, you know, it helped me to believe more in something outside of the doctrine, I suppose, of religion or what I'd been taught or raised with. So I just want to start off by saying it really had a huge effect on my life, and it's great to have you on the other end of the line here. You've done lots of other books since then. I know one of the reads that really excited my wife was...
The Life You Were Born to Live.
Yeah, The Life You Were Born to Live.
One of my favourite books.
Yeah, first off, in terms of the life you were born to live, how did you gather all this data? How did you put it all together? Can you help me out there?
Sure. Well, in a larger context, especially for listeners who aren't familiar with me or my work, it is one of my more popular books. It deals with what I call a trans-rational system, because I have no scientific explanations for how it works, but I've worked with it for 25 years now, a little over that, and it, as you know, is quite accurate. But we just don't have a theory for it yet. I've worked with various mentors in my life, beyond the man I called Socrates, described in Way of the Peaceful Warrior, and each of those mentors brought something special to my life. And the one I call the Warrior Priest, that I will actually be writing about all these mentors in my next and probably final book. It'll be a memoir. He said, Dan, I've seen that you're going to be doing people some good. Now, I'd only been a gymnastics coach. I really hadn't stepped forward to teach what I do now, even though I had a lineage before that. And he said, I want to do a reading for you. And I said, well, I don't know what a reading is exactly, but sure. And I sat down and he proceeded to change my life. He clarified what had been hazy, what I've been stumbling over in the dark. I could see my life more clearly, the hurdles I was here to overcome, and the strengths I had. And it impressed me so much when he later announced he was going to be teaching an advanced training in Hawaii, in which he would pass on how I asked him whether he was a psychic, and he said, no, I'm not a psychic, but I've been trained to know where to look. And that intrigued me. And so he was going to teach where to look in this training, which Joy and I, my wife and I, both took. There was nothing that would have held us back. We brought our little girls at the time with us, and we made it happen. And I only had 20 pages of notes. But, you know, from those 20 pages, I worked with them. I did readings for family and friends based on the understand the basics of the system. And they were so impressed with it, I finally internalized the knowledge, those 20 pages of notes. And over 8 years of doing many, many, many readings based on this material, my insight deepened. And after 8 years, I finally taught health professionals the system, how it worked. And then I decided it was time to write a book. So that's how it evolved. I couldn't have explained it any more briefly, but to give it a context. But that's where it came from, what I call the life purpose system. I will say that anyone, any of your listeners, can go to peacefulwarrior.com. And at that website, the first thing they'll see is a little thing that says life purpose calculator. And it's free. Anyone can just click on it, put in their date of birth, and see get a small taste of the depth of material that is in the book. And people may find that more useful than just hearing me explain it.
Great. Yeah. And I think anybody who's listening to this right now is the first thing they'll do when they get off this podcast. But it's definitely one of the things I'll be doing first thing tomorrow morning.
I've already done it. I've gone onto the website and I've checked and put the information. Mind you, I love the book anyway, but I've gone and put my information.
So did you find that repetitively as you spoke to people about different times of, you know, that the same thing kept turning up? Is that what helped you to gather the data and document it? Did you find a commonality?
That's hard to articulate. It's a very good question. It's hard to articulate how. I suppose that's how it worked. I just got more insight into the basics, the fundamentals of the system. It's like a dancer. They learn certain movements. You know, they take ballet, they learn certain positions, and then they start moving. Whether they go into modern dance, they just start variations on a chord. A musician learns basically, you know, how many chords are there? How many notes are there? And they start to play with it. And they see more ramifications. And that's the best way I can explain it.
Right. And so in terms of, you're talking about your teacher who was Socrates, yeah?
Yes, that is my mentor, as described in the book, but I have had four other major mentors. So I'm going to reveal the story behind the story in this memoir.
Really?
I don't have a title yet, so I'm not really I'm not really promoting it. I have a few months to even get a rough draft of the book. Right. It's been a massive work, but very interesting writing memoir. I recommend it for anybody, whether they want to get it published or not. It's quite a useful process.
So how have you found it useful? How has it been useful for you?
Well, it's helped me to look at my life again with the wisdom of my years and process. People think, oh, I couldn't remember the details when I was young, but they come in, they pop up. It's amazing how it hones the memory. And so in terms of getting insight, you know, I'm going to, Ian, if you remind me after we talk, I'm going to email you a little essay because it's a personal mission of mine to encourage people to write their story.
Right.
It gains in value over time for friends, for family, for loved ones. Can you imagine if we found a journal written by great-great-grandparents and finding out what they went through and what their lives were like, how valuable that could be for us.
Absolutely.
It's going to be equally valuable for those who follow us to see our story, because each of us has a story which is our treasure. There is not a story on the planet exactly like ours.
Yeah.
Our lives are each a novel being written. So I think it's important for us to appreciate our story.
It's a funny thing that you would say, because, you know, my father is the second eldest of 25 children. And it's the same mother, same father. And we lost my grandfather a little over 10 years ago. And I remember my father was always prompting my grandfather, you know, because it was like, we have this knowing that, you know, if we you know, if we lose our history, we lose part of the mystery of our lives. I think that my father was always prompting him, you know, John, write some of it down. Let me just sit down with a recorder and just record some of the stories, you know, because of what he went through and how his life was. Because once people leave, you know, there's such a large chunk leaves with them, you know. And there's so much wisdom in who we were and what has gone on in our lives, you know.
Yeah, it's a great. Good,
well said. Mm. Well said. And by the way, I did actually have someone interview my parents. They lived some miles from us, and a lady who does that professionally, and she sat down and asked them questions about their lives, and we have it recorded now, and we listen to it every now and then. It's really a treasure. So yeah. I recommend that for anyone while their parents are living, because otherwise there's nobody to ask.
Yeah, yeah,
absolutely.
That's rich.
Just going back to Way of the Peaceful Warrior, is that an accurate and true account of events, or was there what's it called? Was it like a combination of? I can't remember. I heard somewhere that that Socrates wasn't one person; it was many people. But I'm not sure if that's the case. How can you just explain that? With the actual book?
Of course. Of course. I've been straightforward ever since the book was published many years ago that Way of the Peaceful Warrior, you know, was my first book. And I figured, well, why don't I base it on my life? Yeah. And so it's autobiographical, but I've never called it memoir, because when you write memoir, it's supposed to be your memories as accurately. You don't have deliberate fiction in memoir. Yeah. Yeah. And I blended in fictional elements. So it's a kind of a new genre. It's a semi-fictional autobiography.
Yeah.
Most of it's true. It wouldn't be, if it were just a novel, I'd say it's just a novel. I made it all up, which is more closely describing some of my other books. But Way of the Peaceful Warrior was structured on my life. Many events happened just as I described them. Mm. However, there are certain, those things that seem magical, those magical elements. Like, could Socrates actually leap up on a rooftop? Well, no. I hope that's not too disappointing to people hearing that.
But, sure.
So in the memoir, I absolutely make all that precisely clear. And people can appreciate, I think, what actually took place in writing it. So it does blend fact and fiction.
That's a good way to describe it, because I think that's kind of what I heard about the book. And when you think about the book now and about the, you know, it was so impactful at the time, you know, when it was released and for years later. How do you think it has an impact now on the world now and how relevant it is today and people reading it today, new generation of people reading it?
The only feedback and the most realistic and accurate feedback is the book just keeps selling. Mm. It gets handed from families, parents to children, children to parents. And again, it's not that I'm so smart. Believe me. I mean, there are many people out there smarter and even more spiritual than I am. But somehow what happened was I wanted to share from my heart a story that might feel relevant to people and about the big picture of their lives that they could relate to viscerally, not just intellectually. It's not just a self-help book. It's a story that many people can still say, this is like my story. It reflects elements of me. And so that was the motive behind the book. I wrote it. I rewrote it. And when it came out, I thought a few college students might like it because it was about my time mostly during my college years. And people tell me, you know, the subtitle of the book, I didn't give it the subtitle. My publisher did when he put out the paperback. It's a book that changes lives. And again, that's not a claim I make. But so many people were writing to me. And I asked them, I said, what do you mean it changed your life? And I could get was it changed their perspective. Mm. It reminded people of the bigger picture of life and our higher and our bigger promise. Mm. And it amazes me and my wife that it continues to reach out to many people and touch many lives. And it hasn't gotten too dated.
So when you say...
Though eventually we'll have electric stations rather than gas stations.
That's already happening. When you say, the bigger promise, that's quite a significant thing to say. What do you mean by that?
Well, what I mean is there... Sometimes people... have been successful, but they feel there's something missing. Hmm. There are people who are struggling with the challenges of conventional life, education, children, money, finances, health, and so on, which we should be. That's our business in daily life. But we have a yearning for the transcendent, to rise above it all, to see, to understand, as if most of us are down in the weeds at the base of a mountain, looking at the details on the ground, and suddenly we find ourselves at the mountaintop in a panoramic vision that is so beautiful because everything looks more beautiful from the distance. Hmm. And that is what it's like to bridge the conventional with the transcendent. And, of course, the world's religions are all about striving for the transcendent. Spiritual practices, what we call that in every culture, are about transcending, awakening, rising above, liberation, many words for it. Because, you know, when we go to sleep at night, we dream. And then we wake up in the morning and realize, oh, I'm awake now. But in everyday life, there is a kind of dreaming we're still doing. Now, what does that mean? It means we're awake technically, but we still have these associations, beliefs, opinions, projections that add on complications to the simplicity of life arising out of mystery. What the Zen masters call suchness or isness. Simplicity. You know, that's why a writer named Barbara Rast once said, the lesson is simple, but the student is complicated. And we complicate everything.
Yeah.
So that's what I was pointing to in the book, to remind people of the ultimate simplicity, ease of life, how to flow with life rather than resisting and clinging and craving and yearning and hoping and wishing and magical thinking. And accept life in a calm, not always calm. It's not always appropriate to be calm if our house is on fire, but relatively calm, showing equanimity, a certain degree of serenity, as we face the challenges of everyday life.
You know, it's a funny thing. We've just got off a call to a chap named Rian Duras. He's one of the co-founders of the Flow Research Collective. He's a co-founder with one of the authors of a book called Stealing Fire, which speaks about flow states. And it seems, though, that the book and the story itself and everything that you're writing leans towards is about the magic outside of the complexity. You know, that when we let go of the complexity, there's a magic occurs in our lives, and that magic is within us and it's accessible to us all the time. But to get there, you know, we have to be willing to let go or to face the part of us that needs to hold on, but we don't have to be that part. Do you feel that is kind of what you were edging towards with your work throughout your life?
Well, that's certainly one of the things. There was a man named Stanislaw Lec who once wrote a book, and in that book he said, "I wanted to tell the world just one word, but unable to do that, I became a writer." And I became a writer too. And if it were that simple a message, I would have written one book and left it at that. In fact, I didn't write another book after Way of the Peaceful Warrior for 10 years. Mm. But then new mentors came into my life, new information I so wanted to share. So I ended up, so far, 17 books.
Yeah.
I'll stop at 18, I think. But the point is, I don't want to overwhelm people with or give them vague, abstract ideas. There are two ways to make our lives simpler, and I'm going to share them right now. Yeah. One is through a story. A young man came up to me once after I gave a talk at a university, and he said, "Dan, I know you do consultations with people and give them some advice and perspectives and so on, and you must charge a lot of money for that, for your time." He said, "What can you tell a poor college student for a dollar?" And he gave me a dollar. And I said, I told him six words, which could change his life if he practiced. I gave him a practice in six words, which were here and now, breathe and relax. Anyone listening to this and repeating those four words, not just like a mantra, but feeling into them. What does it mean here and now? We hear about that all the time. Good to live in the present moment. Sure. That's not a revelation to most people, but what does that actually mean? What does it entail? What is the significance of it? And of course, breathe and relax. These things are in our control. And if we could just, you know, people are worried about stress. Stress is an abstract idea. It doesn't exist except as a notion and a concept. But what does exist is tension. Mm. And when people say stress is bad for you, no, stress isn't bad for you. Stress is a natural part of life. What's bad for you is the tension. Mm. And can you imagine feeling stressed out and totally relaxed at the same time? That's a different experience than being stressed and tense. So here and now, breathe and relax. That is a practice. So the present moment actually simplifies our life because we can't think about, ruminate, regret, anticipate, worry about anything in the present moment. Because in the present moment, all we have is awareness of this moment. Anything we think about is either the past, what we call the past, or what we call the future, either memory or imagination. Which is why Mark Twain once said, I've had many troubles in my life, most of which never happened. Because that's the troubles we have are in the past and future. So that's one thing that can simplify our life. And the other is focusing on action. Rather than trying to fix our insides and feel just the right emotions and positive thoughts and so on, if we focus on what needs doing right now, because that is more in our control than what thoughts or emotions pass through us or pop into our field of awareness. And that's a whole weekend workshop minimum to really convey this idea. But I do recommend it when we focus on, okay, what do I need to do in response to this moment? It simplifies our life and makes us more realistic and practical.
We definitely have a huge tendency towards complexity, and it seems to get more and more complex as we get older, you know. I just wanted to ask another question, which I'm just kind of intrigued about. So when the book first came out, I mean, it must have been very cutting edge. It must have been at a time because, you know, the human development circuit kicked off. You know, you had the Beatles had gone out to Laxmanjula to Rishikesh, and they'd come home, and suddenly, you know, everybody was becoming spiritual. They'd brought their yoga master with them, and then out of that seemed to spring, you know, spiritual movement, you know, from the 60s right through to where it is today. You know, you had the likes of, you know, Warner Earhart came on the scene. You had Buckminster Fuller, who was a genius of his time. And then, you know, out of that seemed to, you know, emerge the human development movement. Where would you consider yourself someone that is involved in that movement or has been part of that? And what have you seen as some of the changes over the years, and where do you feel it's heading?
Oh, yeah, another great question. Well, one of my mentors, I call the professor, is writing a history of world spirituality, and there'll be nothing like it if he ever publishes it. It's been 30 years. He's still alive, actually, at this time. He's in his late 80s. But even to touch upon, I mean, yes, there have been phases where different movements happen, different charismatic teachers of one kind or another, varying authenticity, and so on. It's very difficult to see myself in that picture where I fit. Only history will tell. I've just tried to write honestly and from my heart, and speak from my heart. That's the best I can do. But as far as the different movements, I would say, broadly speaking, just as we tend to separate the brain into two halves, right and left half, even though we know that's not strictly true anymore, we have neuroplasticity and so on. We can still speak with some degree of accuracy that the hemispheres of the brain do have different functions. One can help take over for the other if it's injured and so on. But in the same way, the Earth has this kind of two hemispheres. We have the East and the West. And classically speaking, it's not so true today. But in ancient times, the East was associated with its own solution to happiness, which was more the introverted view. Look inside. All our answers lie inside. Mm-hmm. Meditation, yoga, and so on, India, China, Japan, and other Eastern cultures, Asian cultures. And then we have the Western kind of approach to happiness and fulfillment, which is more extroverted, achieve, succeed, make a lot of money, and so on. And so many of us in the West became disillusioned with just the rat race. You know, as Lily Tomlin, a comedian once, an actress once said, even if you win the rat race, you're still a rat.
Yeah.
So we got disillusioned with that. So we turned to the East for answers. And so all these movements about fixing the mind and having the right peaceful emotions and loving and happy emotions, these are kind of work on yourself. But to me, the answer is not one or the other. It's both. We need to take care of the world around us and function in life. But we also need to be aware of what's going on inside of us. And so I think the answer is both. And various movements of one kind or another have become more popular, whether you call it Est or, you know, Avatar, any of these different movements. And they all serve historically, and we learn from them. And that's all I can say in the time we have.
Cool.
So just before we finish up, Dan, I just want to ask then, what is the one thing, I suppose, that you are most grateful for in the time that you've spent doing the work that you've done?
My wife.
Really?
Oh, great answer.
Why?
Yes. They say that old saying, behind every man is a good woman.
Yeah.
Well, maybe sometimes before a man, ahead of a man, my life has been physically keeping up with my wife, Joy. She's been my primary teacher, not formally. She doesn't sit there and lecture me, but she's been a sterling example of courage, of discernment. So she has often guided me when I've stumbled. I think it's easy to, obviously I'm going to be writing about four primary mentors in my life. She's not one of those. They were formal teachers. In the next book again, but she's been my companion for 44 years thus far. And, so I have to acknowledge that, as I write my memoir, I see that more and more. So I've been very fortunate and blessed. Not everyone, I had a marriage before that, which was not so blessed. And I learned from that. So that's what I would answer. And I think what she would have me say, I would want to share with your listeners, if it was one thing to leave them with, is it's so important for us to trust the process of our life unfolding. Faith, F-A-I-T-H, I would describe faith as the courage to live as if everything that happens is for our highest good and learning. And that includes the challenges going on today as we speak on the planet. One form of adversity after another, it's just our lives, and to trust ourselves and to stop comparing ourselves to other people, which is a profound disrespect for who we are. We're here to live our life, not someone else's. And it's important to be an original, and it doesn't, you know, that could be a whole topic again, this idea of not comparing ourselves to others or ourselves in the past, you know, like I used to be able to do this and that, but just to live our lives right now and embrace ourselves, take our lives in our own arms.
Oh, beautiful. That's a perfect way to end this conversation, Dan. Thank you so much for your time. We really appreciate it.
Dan,
I know
Millman,
our listeners are going to love
thank
this.
Thank you very, very, very much for giving us your time again.
Oh, it's really been my pleasure.
God bless. Take care, Dan.
Okay, take care.
If you found this information inspiring, make sure you subscribe and tune in to the next Dorothy and the Dealer podcast.